Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Old news.
It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Hello, hello, and welcome. We are before a live audience as we are taping this show at the Hearst Media Center in Colony, New York. And the Hearst Media Center is in the building of the Times Union. This is a new space for community gatherings and so on. And so the good folks at WAMC decided that we would have a couple of programs here so that we could
get the place underway.
Well, this is the Media Project.
Then
there's also going to be the Roundtable, a wonderful live broadcast, which will happen here. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, and your putative host, Dr. Alan Shartok, is here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
What does that mean, putative?
It means that I'm supposedly
means
the
little.
Host.
Little.
And that's Rosemary Armeo, director of the journalism program at the University of Albany. For how much longer? How long is your...
Actually, I'm staying through the end of the summer on staff, but I'm leaving for parts unknown on Monday.
We're losing Rosemary. And is this your last Media Project
this
program?
This is. I'm a little sad about this.
We're very
this
sad.
Is what, this is how I started at WIMC, filling in on Media Project.
Yeah, and then became a star of the morning program.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't even have coffee around the town anymore. People go, you... I listen.
Yes, I know. And that's problematic, isn't it, Dr. Shartok?
Yeah, everything is a challenge, as you know.
No, it's a very good thing. Rosemary is going off to help encourage investigative reporting around the world. Her first assignment is going to be in Amman, Jordan, correct?
Right, right.
Which is a really great thing to do. I'm going to take one off. And that really is going to give you an opportunity to make a difference in journalism going forward.
I hope so. This is a new thing where journalists from the West kind of teach our colleagues in the East who have no, like us, a 200-year tradition of a free press. And while it's under attack here, we have some real ideas of how it should run. They have no idea at all. So if officials call them names or refuse to answer questions, they kind of just say, okay. So I'm going to go over newly empowered to make them push harder.
But of course, meanwhile, we're having our own challenges
we
here.
We are.
Yeah. And no one less than the President of the United States has called the press the enemies of the people.
Yeah, that is we.
We, yes.
Yeah.
Les ennemis, c'est moi, as they say, or something like that.
I didn't know you...
East ein enemy. What can you do? Actually, and we're learning new things about practicing the press through this administration. This week, there was this amazing situation where the president was meeting with a couple of top Russian officials, the Russian foreign minister and the Russian ambassador to the UN, and the American press were excluded, but the propaganda photographer for Russia was allowed in. And this presented a problem for the American media. That means you're using a propaganda photo in your coverage, which we tend to try to avoid.
It actually made for a better story because we could not have more plainly said the government is cutting us out of business than to keep reminding you that this was taken by the Russian photographer, not by us. So I think, as with many things that Trump does, it backfired on him. And these are new tactics for us in America, but I've seen them overseas all the time, to exclude, to not talk to. We would have reporters call officials and ask questions about budgets, about people running for office, purely public things, not about their sex life or anything like that. And they would say, well, who are you? Why should I be talking to you? And the reaction of the readers was, well, the official's right. They're busy. Who are you? So for us now to be excluded from meetings between Russians and our top government officials, which of course are really in the news and the public interest right now, is both shocking and reveals how we don't have laws that cover that. We have laws about open meetings. We have laws about records that you can get after the fact. But Trump has a lot of lawyers, and they are going right up to that letter. We're going to only get what's completely spelled out, and anything else, forget about it.
And I don't even know, Rosemary, if we'll get what's spelled out.
We'll have to fight for it.
This is a guy who doesn't always follow the rules. Right. At least the rules of tradition he doesn't follow. So this has been really a challenge. There are those people who are saying now, a very famous history professor at, I've been referencing him lately, at Yale University. You can go to salon.com and write in the word Snyder.
Tim Snyder.
Yeah, Tim Snyder. And he says that going after the press this way is all part of setting up a coup. And he's an expert in the Holocaust, and he watched the steps that went up to the Holocaust, and he is saying, this is pretty much on track. And when you're going after the press, that, of course, is one essential part of all of this.
I have to defend Alan here for a minute, because you've been talking about Schneider and the idea that we're moving towards tyranny, towards a coup, and getting a lot of pushback from WAMC listeners saying, oh, my God, you're just daydreaming. This is like conspiracy theory. It really is not. If you look at the evidence, institutions that we have, if not exactly loved, no one seems to love the press anymore, but we certainly understood the role for it, it's under attack. So is the judiciary. So is Congress in many ways. That's part of an effort. And there are other things. Schneider spells out like 20 things. And the pattern is very scary.
It is.
It's there.
I went to see Cabaret at Proctor's, the wonderful Broadway touring production of it. And you know what this underscores is what the show reveals to us is this great, exciting nightlife going on. Berlin, of course, was a place of great liberation, libertine, I guess would be the better word for it. And what people failed to recognize was what was coming upon them, kind of like the frog being dropped into the water as it heats slowly. And I wonder if there is some truth to that, that what is happening here is we're not quite aware of how potent the changes are that are underway.
Well, Rex, all you have to do is think of some of the things that have gone on now and have been covered. I have to do this for Rosemary because she says I get away from the press aspect of this program.
Oh, all the time. Yeah. Anybody who listens to the show knows that.
But let me tell you... But let me tell you about the way we did it on
Fire Island.
Okay, so when you start talking about this election is going to be rigged, remember that, everybody? This election is going to be rigged. Then it wasn't rigged. The polls were rigged. They were going to be rigged also. Now we're going to find out that he's at somewhere in the 40% range of approval, but maybe by the time he runs, it'll be 20%. That's my thinking. And at that stage of the game, are you going to say, well, this election is going to be rigged, so you can't have one? That's what you worry about. And that's why you have a press, a free press, that will cover the nuances of all of this.
So you place all that against what happened this week in the Capitol building of West Virginia, and the head of the health, Tom Price, the head of the U.S. Health and Human Services Agency, is in the building, and he's followed by a local reporter who keeps yelling questions at him, and his question had to do with what are the pre-existing conditions. He wanted to know if domestic abuse was going to be considered one. Price didn't answer. So he's walking down the hall. He's got his cell phone like this because he's using the tape recorder on it, and he's holding it up like this over, I guess, the security guard, which is right in front of him, and he's yelling the question over and over again. They handcuff him, and they have charged him. He was held on $5,000 bond until his paper could release him, and he was charged with interfering with a government function.
Right.
This is a journalist asking a question. That's a First Amendment right. The charges, I thought they'd be dropped by, like, right now when I'm talking to you.
Yes,
and they have not been.
They have not been. No, in fact, the Capitol Police seem to be, in West Virginia, seem to be doubling down, saying that he was aggressively breaching the Secret Service agents. This reporter's name, by the way, is Dan Hyman. He's 54 years old. He's a veteran reporter. He's worked for public radio in West Virginia. It's not as though he's just somebody out to harass the Secretary of Health and Human Services. He was doing his job as a journalist, and he was arrested for doing it. Now, I think we can all agree that there are times when journalists are less than demure and polite. They sometimes get on people's nerves. That is actually something that
I teach it. I teach it to my students.
Yeah.
You know, you don't ask a question politely and then wait for an answer. You say, what's the answer? I need this answer. I'm on deadline. Come on. That's part of our job. I believe it's protected under the First Amendment. As this guy's lawyers, as Heyman's lawyer said, I've never had a case brought against someone for speaking loudly before. He didn't punch him. He didn't physically assault him. There's nothing in there that constitutes anything more than a public official being asked a question about his public duties. And worse, it's part of a pattern. It could have been Andrea Mitchell, who I think you all know. She works for MSNBC right now, but she's been a staple of TV news for decades. And her job is the State Department. And Rex Tillerson, who, as head of Exxon, didn't have to deign to speak to us mere mortals, treats her in the same way. And she is yelling questions across the room to him all the time, considered as a coup if he says, that's all, see you tomorrow, no comment. If she gets that much out of him, she considers it a victory.
He speaks.
Yeah. This is what they, I think they advertise that. This is really not a good pattern when officials from other countries mock or shoo away our reporters because in their countries they have control over the press. It used to be, and they've always done this, but it used to be that a Clinton or an Obama in office would say, no, we don't do it here. You remember when Obama was in Cuba and reporters had questions and Raul Castro did not want to answer questions from American journalists and Obama shamed him into it. That doesn't happen anymore. Now you have Rex Tillerson sitting there saying, good one. Yeah, you got that, reporter. This is not a good thing. Even if you hate journalists, it is not a good thing. And it's increasing, and it's part of a pattern.
So let me ask you guys a question. From the very beginning, he's gone after the New York Times, for example, and called it the failing New York Times. And
which, despite this, has added 300,000 new subscribers since the beginning of the year because of the Trump bump.
I'm so surprised about that, you know, because WAMC had its only one and only and perhaps only ever one day million-dollar fund drive. And when your reporters called me up, Rex, and said, what was that? I said, it was all Donald Trump. Yeah. So I think the institutions that he tries to destroy are actually helped by him. And I thought our second fund drive since that time would probably not go that well until he fired Comey. And I said, God will provide.
It is true, and that comes from this long tradition we have that Americans, as much as every poll shows you hate and you don't trust the press, you do see the need for it because now that it's under attack, we're seeing support we never have, and it's in the form of money and increased subscriptions. The New York Times is getting lots more people. I go to marches, and there's people carrying signs saying, support journalists, which I take pictures of everyone I see with those. This is a great thing, and I don't recall seeing it before, so Trump, I hope, may be having the opposite effect than he intends.
Here are a couple of new numbers, by the way, that are just out today from the Quinnipiac poll. American voters disapprove of the way the news media covers Trump by a margin of 58 to 37, but voters disapprove of the way Trump talks about the media by an even larger margin, 65 to 31. And voters trust the media more than Trump, 57 to 31% to tell the truth about important issues. So there are mixed feelings about this. People think that, well, we're not covering Trump appropriately, but we're better than he is at truth-telling anyway.
So it's
awkward.
So Rex and Rosemary, why do people hate the media the way that they seem to, and particularly the press the way they seem to?
Do you think that 40 years of American administrations attacking the media as being unfair has something to do with it? Do you think that Donald Trump is not doing something I consider to be absolutely unpatriotic by attacking the free press, a fundamental core value of America? I think that he's having an effect.
I think there are reasons that people buy this narrative from the administration and right-wing radio that we're unreliable. How many people here have ever been involved in a news event?
Yeah.
Raise your hand.
Right.
Hmm. Okay. Those of you who did. How many?
Wait. No lying. Go ahead.
Okay. Keep your hand up if the press covered it exactly right and got everything that you would have covered.
Right. It doesn't
See?
Happen.
Mm-hmm. It's really hard. My job is to simplify. You go to a complicated event involving dozens of people, and you get a slice of it. You go after the truth as well as you can. And then you also have to get what you collect into a space this big, because that's all there's room for. You are going to leave things out. You are going to distort in a way that participants don't like. And so there is a built-in bias against the press always gets it wrong. And that's exactly what the right-wing radio has been doing for decades now. And then you lard onto that our president's fine skills with marketing and branding and with a lying press, with an unreliable press, you know, with the mainstream media. Like, that's a bad thing. Like, being in the mainstream is bad. Why is that? We used to not like extremists. So how come that's bad? Why is that a pejorative?
And it's a campaign. And, Rosemary, he wants to change the libel laws so it makes it easier for him to sue people. And that's a stinker, because what happens is if you're WAMC or if you're a medium-range newspaper or even a larger newspaper, go defend that and find out how much that costs when a Donald Trump with unlimited personal resources sues you. You know, $50,000, $100,000? These lawyers don't come cheap.
Easily, actually. The deductible is generally $50,000 now in libel cases. And so once you pay that out, then you get into the real money. And the result of that was seen when the professional wrestler known as Hulk Hogan, sued Gawker Media and took down the company. He was bankrolled by one of Donald Trump's good friends, billionaire Peter Thiel. And Peter, that
the guy who started PayPal.
Right. Yeah. Now, I can't defend what Gawker did.
No, they were horrible in court.
Yeah,
again, it fed into the idea that he was arrogant and he was just stupid. He got asked a question about what would you consider an age limit beyond which you would not be profane about someone? And he goes, well, maybe four. I mean, how could the jury like someone who was acting arrogant? All the stereotypes of the press he played into. Nevertheless, there's an absolute First Amendment right, and we have so many years of history where the courts, up to and including the Supreme Court, have supported that. It was out of the civil rights movement in the 60s that the Supreme Court ruled that journalists can make mistakes. You know, they're human, they're going to make mistakes. And if they're small, not material, you get a phone number wrong, you get a minor historical detail wrong, that's not libel. That doesn't exist anywhere else. That is an extraordinary thing, and it rests on a 1964 Supreme Court decision, and our Supreme Court's in a little bit of flux. That could all go away. So Trump's claim that he wants to loosen the libel laws, and our response, oh, you can't do that, they're at the state level, blah, blah, blah. It really is vulnerable.
Well, you know, the other part of that, and Rex, you certainly know that this is a problem because you've heard it from your colleagues, both in broadcast and otherwise, is that when you talked about, Rex, the deductible, that means the insurance company insures you in case you're being sued. But insurance companies don't like to pay out money. And once they get in charge of a case, they get to decide whether there's going to be a settlement in that case or not. Are you all following me? I mean, so what happens is, quite frequently, and I know one reporter on a local news station who was furious because she had done nothing wrong, but the insurance company said, well, it'll either be $1 million or we can pay her $15,000. But the moment you pay $15,000, you've basically admitted that you did something wrong, or at least in a lot of people's minds.
Now, Trump was certainly painted that way.
I feel lucky we've never gotten to that situation.
Have good lawyers.
We have good lawyers, and we're very, very careful.
And you're rich. You're
hers. We're rich, right? Yeah, we're so rich.
But what it does, just the threat of that, I mean, you heard Rex say we're very, very careful. That means not every story maybe that should go into the newspaper that should come out is going to come out. It's going to be held or watered down. That's chilling. That's not to your benefit.
We don't even publish everything that public officials say.
Right.
Because if something that a public official says is libelous, we can be sued for that.
Well, that's interesting.
So we have to be very careful about that.
Rex, let me ask you a question, if I might be.
Well, I am certainly sure that you could.
As long as it's not about his clothing.
Yeah, no, Rex,
or his hair.
Rex has so much starch in his shirts that they're going to get up and walk away one
right
day.
Away.
But however,
so you had to give him the cue, right?
I encouraged it. I'm sorry.
I noticed that the New York Times, when Comey was fired, FBI director Comey was fired, had a six-column headline.
Six-column, all-caps. All-caps headline. What some people would call the second coming headline.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the Daily News had an incredible headline about Trump. But you guys took only a couple of columns in your newspaper as opposed to, you know, everybody else. Mm-hmm. What was that about?
Well, the two-column headline was the top of the page, the upper left-hand corner.
Yeah,
so it wasn't
was,
that it was obscure.
Still,
we're a local newspaper. Our forte is doing what nobody else does, which is to cover the news of New York's capital region and the state of New York with watchdog reporting. That is our forte. It makes no sense for local newspapers nowadays to replicate the reporting that other people are doing, to give people the very same thing that they're paying others to do or that they're getting for free. So if you want to...
But you don't assume that everybody who reads your newspaper reads the New York Times.
Wait a minute, though. I'm a subscriber to the Times Union.
So?
And there is an obligation on the news consumer to know what they're looking at. And I know from reading the Times Union every day that if I see a federal story, a national story on the front page, that's a big honking deal because it's not normally there.
Honking?
Big, huge. I can't say the word I really wouldn't say.
So,
don't do a Joe Biden.
So that story out there was an immediate signal that this is really important. It didn't matter the size of the headline. The New York Times is completely different. They have stories about Comey and Trump every day. So they blow it out.
You're not paying her under the table here.
I'm not. I want to make the point that it isn't all in the media. Why do we have to pick what stories are important and then, furthermore, put them on the front page? Like if they're on page 3, you don't see them. Like you you know, turn the page. That's a crazy idea that's existed forever. Why can't you read the stories? I had editors for years who, if you had a really sensitive story, they would bury it, and reporters would get all upset because it was on page 3. But if it's about certain things, sex among them, food another, people find those stories, even on page 3, even on page 6. So consumers have to take some of the responsibility for this.
And when you have wall-to-wall coverage on cable news, it would be foolish to do the same story the next morning in print. It would basically underscore the weakness of print as a medium as opposed to digital. What we do really better is to take a step back and publish something that takes a little bit longer to read or give people something good
to read. Well, yeah, but let me argue, and you've argued this with me, if, in fact, they repeal Obamacare, then it falls to the Times Union to say, how is this going to hurt New York State, right?
And absolutely.
I mean, that's a major story.
Exactly. And, you know, we have a unique position also in New York State because the Senate Minority Leader is a New Yorker, Chuck Schumer. So our lead headline the second day of the aftermath of Comey was Chuck Schumer calling for a special prosecutor. That is more relevant because he's a local guy. And we've talked about this a lot in this program, the different interpretations people get, the whole different take on the news, depending upon where they get their stories. Do you know, if you watched Fox News the night that Comey was fired, you did not get the analysis saying, wow, this is the second coming of Watergate. This is like Archibald Cox being fired by Nixon. You didn't get that at all. What you got was one analyst after another saying, wow, the president's standing tough and he's getting rid of this terrible FBI director.
Right.
So this is how America gets divided further. And I would argue that that began with Fox News a decade ago, when Fox News was created, the first time in modern times that a news organization has been chartered with the express purpose of having biased news report, in their case, having a more conservative take on the news.
I would argue with you that it started not with Fox News, but with Thomas Jefferson. Because if you guys go and look at some of the things they were saying about him, it was terrible.
Well, it is true, the idea that a newspaper or a mass media, at that time it was newspapers, would be unbiased, that all views would be covered in one place. That is of relatively recent origin in the United States. Even in the 1800s and in the early 1900s, papers were divided. You'd have the Republican paper or the Democratic paper or whatever the local party affiliate was. And people knew, media consumers knew then, that you had, if you wanted a rounded view, you had to look at all things. And the internet has spread that. Now we're splintered. You can get international views. You can get any, you know, quicksand fetish views. Believe it or not, that exists.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Story on NPR, yeah. So you can get anything you want. The difference is the consumers are not putting it all together. We stay in our little silos. So you're only reading the New York Times or you're only looking at Breitbart and Fox News, and that's the scary thing. The partisanship is really being aggravated by that.
It is resurfacing. And when I was a young man, I was the editor of a little tiny paper in Rensselaer, Indiana. We say Rensselaer here. They say Rensselaer in Indiana. The little paper is called the Rensselaer Republican, a six-day-a-week paper. And across the alley was the paper that was called the Jasper County Democrat. And what's funny is that the publisher of the Republican bought out the publisher of the Democrat.
But it stayed the Democrat in the Republican.
It was really pretty amusing. And people, I started to try to do an unbiased, fair paper. I would put wire stories on the front page of the U.S. Senate race between Democrat Birch Bayh and Republican Richard Lugar, and people would say, why are you putting Birch Bayh's lies on the front page? Because we were running wire stories that were truthful, that were accurate.
That speaks a little bit about what's happening now, that the press is under attack and how they're covering. And there is some amazing journalism going on, and it's relentless. The New York Times and the Washington Post come out every day with stuff. And to us, I'm praising it, and the other side is saying, oh, see, they're after and they're harrowing him. He can't do anything right. Poor Trump.
So we have to give the last word, therefore, to Rosemary.
It's the end
of the end of the program, and with your last show, the end of an era here for the Media Project. Thanks to you all for joining us at the Hearst Media Center for the Media Project.
When they know they've got a people's fight to wage, ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build, meet the people, that's a thrill, all together.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Rosemary Armeo is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
For publishers must go. to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.